Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of our brand new podcast, We Are the Other Thing. Before we get into the episode, I want to apologize for the sound quality of the episode. We're brand new to this, and kind of like a garage band style approach to this, we went in with very cheap equipment and absolutely no talent whatsoever. So please bear with us, and I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you for listening. We're doing this via Hangouts and through webcam stuff. So hopefully the audio is good. We don't have any professional equipment.
We're going to find out how it works.
Yeah. I'm calling in from San Francisco Bay Area. Sonic, you're over in Chicago, right?
Hanging out in the Chi-Town.
How's the weather out there right now?
Always crappy, let's be honest.
Yeah, we had a couple of good days. It's a little cloudy and dreary today. Anyway, so a little bit about what we are. Sonic and I have been friends for a few years now. Met in Chicago, working together in the bar industry out there. And about a year ago, we started throwing around this idea of creating a podcast, mostly because we would get online and watch other podcasts or YouTube videos and people who are quote unquote experts in the field of hospitality. And we were, for lack of a better way of putting it, we were disgusted and dismayed by a lot of garbage that was out there. So we thought, hey, if these people can, if these people got thousands of viewers and listeners, then why can't we? And knowing, being the realist that I am, I realized that only about 10 people are ever going to listen to this, but why not? And we started.
You know what? Those 10 people are going to love it.
Yeah, well, they won't have a choice because it's, you know, our family. They love us anyway. But we've been working on this for a few months now, throwing it around, and you know, it was one thing or another always came up. You know, work more than anything. You, Sonic, had a started a family last year, so that has kept you extra busy, more so than normal.
A very happy family, thank you.
Yeah. And my excuse has always been, oh, I gotta work. And when I wasn't working, on the few days off that I would have, I would be like, oh, I'm tired. I don't have time. Well, now we have all the time in the world. Well, I do anyway. Thankfully, you're still working, aren't you?
I am for sure. But I'm still just connected, just like we always were. It's just a different version of connection. So I think that's kind of what we're going to talk about, right?
Yeah, definitely talking about the whole COVID-19 and its effect on hospitality. I've had a week now partaking in the Bay Area shelter in place mandate that has happened. So it's a lot of time to sit at home and think and just wonder what's next. And it's also been an opportunity for me to look back on a bunch of stuff that has always been bugging us. When it comes to the hospitality industry, we've all sat around the bar and after a shift and talked about how things could be better or different or worse. And you know, I was listening to David Chang's podcast, which I listened to a little bit of it, but the last episode that he put out, he made an interesting point that had crossed my mind a couple of days ago and is kind of what I would like to focus on because I'm trying to focus on the positive here. When this is all over and there will be a lot of devastation to the hospitality industry, a lot of mom and pop shops, privately owned bars and restaurants are not going to be able to recover from this. So there's going to be kind of a reset button that's going to get hit when life does start getting back to normal. And I'm trying to look at this as an opportunity to, what do we do with that reset button? We've done so much in the past 20 years with the cocktail revolution and the farm-to-table approach to cuisine. And you've seen, you know, you had your time at, you know, working at Alinea and with the Aviary crew. They are a group of people that always push forward the future of culinary and cocktail. And it has taken hold all over the country. But it's a brave new world after this is over, man. Like, what, where are we going with this, and what can we change?
I honestly think the discussion ends up becoming kind of hitting the rewind button, right? So I think we more so dive into where you and I are coming from. And because my perspective is now so very different than everyone else out there, right? Let's talk about where we're coming from, and then we dive into where we see that being the forward momentum for the industry, because the Alinias, the aviaries are not the everything of the world, right? They're the 1%.
Yeah. Well, let's do that real quick. Let's quickly, you know, anybody who's listening besides our family and friends are going to be like, who the fuck are these guys? Have spent 15 years in the bar industry, 20 years in hospitality. It's the only thing I've ever known. I started out washing dishes in a restaurant back home in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Then I was a cook. Then I was a waiter. Then I was a bartender. Cook, waiter, dishwasher, moved to New York, get a job as a bar back, then a bartender, then a manager, moved to Chicago, started out as a door guy, moved back up into bartending, bar manager again, and then found myself in the cocktail world. Because before that, it was all just nightclubs and dive bars and Irish pubs, which were great. And I completely missed what the culinary thing was. But
that gives you a full spectrum of what we're talking about.
I feel like I've got, you know, an interesting view because I've seen so many different facets of the cocktail industry. I've never gotten to the level that you did with your experience in the kitchens. And I will never be able to cook the way you cook. I provide some witty banter and you cook real well, but that's my
and that works.
Yeah, and now I'm in California, and I'm the GM of a little neighborhood cocktail bar, and that's my resume in a nutshell. And hopefully I've got some of my experience is going to bring an interesting point of view and, you know, some interesting thinking points for anybody who's listening. And I'm hoping that our listeners will contribute some ideas via the anchor.fm platform that we're using, which will allow people to send email and comments on each episode. So I'm hoping everybody, if you got something to say, please comment so that we can, do this discussion thing together, not just the two of us for an hour.
Yeah.
So your background.
I think exactly the idea here is that we became friends and connected through the threads that made it for us to see it. And that's super awesome. But at the same time, I come from a very different background for your background. So we have just a lot of perspective on what's going out there. So I think as we're talking through this, we're going to come with a bunch of different ideas and views of all of it. And you're saying you're the GM of a local cocktail spot out in San Francisco area. And that's, you know, a little bit different than where I'm coming from with high-end kitchens and beverage director for a well-known hotel chain, Kimpton. I guess we should just talk about where we're coming from. But it's just a lot of different perspectives, right? Yeah. And now where my current is, I'm coming from a place called Tok. We are a reservation and events management platform, kind of built out of the Alinea group here at Alinea Next Aviary to do that. And we are the first platform to kind of offer a prepayment, whatever you want to call it, ticketing system, and have since expanded to that. And I think that's kind of a great segue for a kind of where we're going to. We are now offering our system. We built it out in about 72 hours. Our engineering team comes from Google, and they're just crazy talented into working through the COVID-19, the coronavirus, whatever you're more familiar with. But in doing so,
avoid using the coronavirus term. I think COVID-19 sounds more scientific and more urgent, which, you know, the sense of urgency is there, but there are definitely a lot of people who aren't taking this seriously yet.
Yeah, but that's exactly the point of 72-hour build out. I think it was actually closer to 48, but let's call 72 to feel like I hit my numbers. But what we did was we are hospitality focused. I think this is the biggest point that we love to talk about. Whether it was bar back then or now what we're walking into with everything,
Yeah,
COVID-19.
I mean that's been, you know, what I think the conversation today needs to be is about hospitality and what did it mean yesterday? What was hospitality yesterday? What we've developed over the past 20 years since the 90s, and what is the definition of hospitality as we see it as an industry going forward? And from your point of view, you're seeing a unique, you know, all the restaurants and stuff that you guys have partnered up with and worked with, you're now, you know, I imagine things have come to a standstill for you guys as much as the restaurants.
I mean, it's crazy to say this. Absolutely ridiculous to say this. And that's the first thing I want to say. We haven't come to a standstill.
Really?
Because of the functionality that we were so excited and happy to build out, we have not come to a standstill. Work has been absolutely top to bottom, day in and day out. I'm constantly attached. And maybe that's the hospitality in me, like we were talking about, right?
What do you mean you're constantly attached?
Every email, we use Slack for work, sure. If that's something you're familiar with. Yeah. But because of all of it, everything that comes through, I need to know what's going on. I want all the awareness. I want to know what businesses are looking to use Talk. I want to know which restaurants are looking to use Talk. I want to help. It's the hospitality in me. It doesn't matter if they're sitting across from me in a bar anymore. I don't do that. But it's the same idea to my functionality in my brain. I want to feel like they're sitting across from me. So when something comes in, whether it's an email or a Slack or whatever, we get that contact, I want to help. And the coolest thing is, because Nick, as part of the Alinea Group and everything that we do, we as a company offer that. We want to reach out as soon as we can and offer our services and our help every single second of every single day. And we have been working 24/7 since this came up to build it out. I mean, weird, totally random story, and it's not 100% true about where it came from, but I like to believe so. But we were building out the functionality, and like I said, in about 72 hours, so it's not perfect, but we were talking about having our city as the functionality. So you sign into our website, and so it comes up, and as a user, you click into it, and Katie was like, well, this, 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 and this. And so our head of engineers just responded right back to me, fixed it, and in within 24 hours, totally different experience.
No kidding.
And that's crazy. That's absolutely bananas.
So what are some of the challenges that you and your team have taken on and used your platform to be of assistance to restaurants that are using you? And have you seen that? I mean, obviously this is still very, very new, and you guys are developing it on a daily basis and trying to get ahead of what's coming as much as possible and have solutions in place. Can you give us an example of some of the ways that, because as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Talk is essentially just a really cool high-end, at its core, a reservation taker with some extra bells and whistles. It's like open table with, but extra. But now you're talking about using that platform in other ways, or restaurants are using it in other ways. What are some of the things that have helped restaurants have used Talk for to help them stay going during this time when everything's on shutdown?
I mean, so I won't get into the pitch of everything. Yeah. This isn't by no means a sell Talk, and this is not me doing business. Please get that out of the way, right? If in case someone listens to this and hears
this. This is just your experience. And then we'll talk about what me and my little neighborhood bar have been doing as well, because that's all we are. We are not, I am not running a Michelin star famous bar restaurant. Like I'm just a little neighborhood spot, and it's been a little weird past week.
Yeah, for 100% for sure. And I'm just going to give you the beginning of where we got to, the genesis of where talk to go is what we're calling it came from. And again, not a pitch. This is just kind of where this came from. So it's a restaurant out in Seattle called Kenley's. They are award-winning. They are unbelievable. They are fine dining. Essentially, what they did is they hacked our system to, instead of offering their reservations, offered pickup and to go.
Nice.
So what that caused us to do was to reach out to them and say, hey, this is not what the system's built for, but it's super creative that you're interested to offer this. How can we help? And so the entire system that we built out in that 72 hours or whatever was to create what they needed. This one restaurant, it's what they needed to get up and running for this pickup and to go. So in the morning, they are a pickup system. In the afternoon, they are a pickup and to go. And at night, they are frozen meals that they offer to everything. I think that's what they're doing. And I could be wrong about any of that, but whatever. But essentially, they turned themselves from one fine dining restaurant to three different versions of themselves with different offerings to make sure that the people in Seattle had some functionality to do what they wanted to do.
So this wasn't a result of Talk being like, hey, let's try and, you know, use our platform as something. This was the ingenuity of a restaurant that went into your platform and said, we needed to keep doing something. What are the tools around us in our restaurant that we can utilize? And Talk just happened to be one of them. They actually had to hack your system.
Yes.
And that's one of the things I will always love about the hospitality industry, is the ingenuity and the creativity and the determination to just power forward through times of struggle and downturn. And it's so that again goes to what we've been talking about for off and on through text message and phone calls the past week, and getting ready for this first inaugural episode, is I want to follow as many people in bars and restaurants that are thinking outside the box like that. And, you know, we might be witnessing a brand new reshaping of our industry. And I've been making notes for a week now. It's, you know, I've had so much downtime and it's way too much time to be in my own head. And it's going to be a brand new undiscovered frontier, at least it's something that nobody in our generation has ever had to deal with. And it makes me happy and excited to hear people like those that are running that restaurant are thinking like that. And I'm hoping we can, you know, if not today, but in future podcasts, we can talk more about the different, you know, changes that might happen due to that ingenuity.
I mean, I can talk for 1,000 more podcasts for hours about this, right?
Mm-hmm. Good thing we have time.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because I came from the white linens, the chefs of the world. That's my background. That's what we're talking about. Right. And you're coming from working your way up through that. And I guess more specifically, you sat across from me at Sable.
Oh yeah.
And that's how we became close, right?
Yep. Yeah. I was the one that came with all the curious questions, and I looked at, you know, you and the team with you at Sable at the time, and I was just beginning to be introduced to finer dining and craft cocktails and the history of cocktails. So I played a lot of catch up, and thanks to you and John Stanton and Chris and Moni and everybody else over at the Sable team when I was bugging you guys, because my career wouldn't have gotten to where it was if it wasn't for your influence. And me bugging you on a nightly basis.
But the coolest thing is, at the end of the day, your questions were rooted in Mezcal because that was your jam at the time.
At the time, yeah. Still is, but yeah.
But the idea of the end of the conversation was that it didn't matter where you were coming from, where I was coming from, or if it was Chris or Moni or John. The idea was the hospitality, right? And so now we're talking about a different version of that hospitality. It's no longer someone sitting across from us because we can't. It's just not a functionality of what's going on right now.
Right.
But we can still be hospitalitarians reaching out to the folks that, you know, want to continue and need to continue to function for their business. And that doesn't matter if they're 3 Michelin starred or the coffee spot down the street. Yeah, and that's what's coming to us.
Yeah, hospitality, by the definition that I understand, is the ability to make others feel comfortable and welcome. I mean, it for me, hospitality today is as simple as sending text messages to my team. We did a video chat with my team a couple days ago, but I didn't really get a chance to do any check on people one-on-one. So I woke up this morning and I was like, you know what? It's been a week now. We've been on this lockdown or this shelter in place here in the Bay Area. And let me just shoot each individual team member a text message. Like, hey guys, how you holding up? Do you need anything? Not that I can do much for anybody, but if there is anything that I can help with, I wanted to throw it out there that, hey, got some time. You know, if it's anything you guys need, maybe I can help. Or just, how you doing? How you hanging in? You're not losing your mind yet? Those simple little check-ins, if nothing else, it meant a lot to me because I have been thinking about these people. I spent all last week, obviously, staying in touch with family and everything. But once I learned that my family was doing okay, then I started thinking about my bar family. You know, how are they doing? And now you with your company and, you know, you're doing the same thing. You're reaching out and, hey guys, what do you need? Are you okay? I mean, that's hospitality at the moment, is we're just making sure everybody's okay.
I mean, my job is technically in sales, which is not something I come from in any definition of the world, but at the same time, God bless you
for taking that on, because I couldn't do it.
Here we are. It's what we do. But at the same time, like, I have had to change my mindset and wrap my head around it and be like, hey, listen, I'm coming from that place of hospitality, right? I'm not reaching out because someone says to me, hey, hit these numbers. This is your sales job. I'm coming from, hey, you're reaching out to places you think this would make sense for. And if they don't want to do it, that's fine. It's totally fine. But at the same time, it's like you looking out for your staff, right? You shoot that text, it's the same thing as me shooting at that email.
Yeah.
Hey, can we help? Is the entire, if I just sent an email that just said, can we help?
Nobody's reading that. They're just skipping over it.
No one, but that's exactly what I want. I want the hospitality. I want the can we help. Honestly, can we help? And if we can't, and it doesn't make sense, and I get the response of, hey, our business is deciding to close for the next 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks, whatever it is. Well, shit, at least I gave my offer, right? But at the same time, if maybe that trickles in the back of your head to help, and even if not now, maybe in 3 weeks, you shoot me an email and say, hey, maybe my business, which is everything to me and my staff, this can help. Fuck, sign me up. What do I need to do?
Oh,
that to me is the coolest thing.
And it's true. Like when we sit back and think about what our role is to play in the hospitality industry, which it can mean a lot of different things to different people. I think you and I have a similar approach and mindset to what hospitality is. And for me, it's always been, I've always told this story since my first job in Chicago, when I got to be the AGM of a little sports bar up by Wrigleyville. And the bar was not doing well for a lot of different reasons, but we had a staff meeting and there was this defeatist attitude by amongst some of the staff, because they felt like we were always trying to play catch up. We were just copying all the other bars. And quite frankly, at the time, all the bars in Wrigleyville were always all doing the same thing. There was nothing really unique. So I asked my staff, why do our guests come to us as opposed to, you know, the bar across the street, which is doing the exact same specials we're doing, serving the exact same food and drink we're serving? Why are they here? And everybody always had this, well, I don't know, because they couldn't answer. I said, well, it's you. You as the bartender, the cocktail waitress, the cook, the food runner. Like, you guys are the difference between the guys next door. And that I didn't realize what I was saying at the time until it came out, but it stuck with me later on. Our job, or at least for me, my job as a hospitality professional, is everybody who walks through the front door of my bar or restaurant is looking for a two-hour getaway. They just want a break from the real world, where that break is to celebrate something, or that you've had a bad day, or whatever the hundreds of different reasons is that anybody walks into a bar. Our job is to welcome them into our home and provide that experience for them. And now here we are, and that sense of, you know, we're here for other people. We're here to help and make sure you are more comfortable and you leave happier than when you came in. That still sticks, even at this time when there are no restaurants and bars operating, or operating on a very minimal level. Like, all we can do out here is delivery and takeout.
Yeah,
we're still providing that service, and that desire to give that sense of comfort and community to those who don't work in hospitality, or even, it's actually, and for me, it's even especially those who work in hospitality who probably need it as much, if not more, than anybody else right now. Like, that's our role in society, to give people that respite. Just the term restaurant has its origins in France, where it is a place to rest and rejuvenate yourself. We are tasked with, or we've chosen to give ourselves a task of rejuvenating people in their souls and their spirits through food and drink. That hasn't gone away. And I'm really, really anxiously awaiting what that looks like during this time and after.
So my question becomes, how do we fix that? Because I'm on the other side and I'm saying, hey, this is a great way to get you up and running. This is a great way to see it. I'm coming from cocktail bars, high-end bars, all that fun stuff. I'm coming from things that tend to make sense. Those places that are not as financially stable.
Okay, that's a great, like, because I've, like I said, I made a bunch of notes on things that we should talk about. And
yeah,
hear me. Okay, unsustainability. It was the first thing that came up right away in my thoughts. We are bartenders, servers, cooks, and food runners, everybody, front of house, back of house. We are an industry that notoriously is a live paycheck to paycheck type of a gig. You know,
yes,
we never save our money, especially when we're younger in this industry. It isn't until later on that we figure, oh, you know, if I just save 10% of my tips, it adds up fast. But that's
neither. Even when we're older, it doesn't matter.
And, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about a lot over the past is, you know, we take this industry seriously, and a lot of people who aren't in this industry love and appreciate bars and restaurants and take them seriously. But yes, how seriously do we take it that we can't provide, you know, we have to rely on tips all the time? That's the one thing that really gets me, is that we as in America have yet to figure out how to get out of the tip system. And while I have made a lot of money in the past thanks to tips, and riding like a double-edged sword, even bringing up this subject. But there's not a steady paycheck. Right. There's not a steady paycheck. There's very few companies, unless you work for a major chain or a hotel, like, there's no insurance. There's no 401k. And then the one that irks me the most having started in dive bars and Irish pubs and stuff like that. Pardon me one second. His phone is ringing, and I'm using the office, and it's not my phone.
You're good.
So start out in nightclubs, dive bars, Irish pubs, all that good stuff. And then I discover 10 years later, the craft cocktail movement. Oh, I want to do this. I have a buddy of mine who he was appearing on the cover of magazines and getting all these write-ups. And I asked him, how'd you do this? He gave me a bunch of information on the USBG, which, by the way, if you haven't checked out the USBG and what they're doing right now and their efforts to help alleviate some of the strain on the bartenders, go check out their website, usbg.org. They've got some great resources right now, but I digress.
Yes, they have been awesome.
Yeah, and we'll get back to that, all the different companies that have helped out. We'll get into that. But anyway, so I get into craft cocktails. I join the USBG. I start going to seminars. I start reading books, and I finally get into a place where I can learn and make and craft cocktails, and I start making less money. I have taken the time and I have spent money to go to seminars. I've spent money on books. I'm educating myself. I'm trying to hone my craft. And I find myself making less money. What industry I was talking to my sister-in-law yesterday because she was asking questions about, you know, how things are going. I said, you know, she's a lawyer. And I said, can you imagine if your boss comes to you and says, you're doing an amazing job. We'd like to promote you, but you're taking a 30% pay cut. And even when you go into management, and you know this as well, I think anybody who's ever gone from waiting tables and bartending to get the opportunity to be a manager and not receive tips, and your boss goes, I can only pay you $35,000. Or
Can you see the body language?
It hurts, man. Because you do it because you love it and you know that you want to, you know, push forward not only yourself, but the bar that you're or restaurant that you're working at. You want to be a part of that, and yet you can't be compensated. Your boss physically cannot compensate you the way you would as a bartender. Why have we not figured that out yet? And if anybody has got that answer, please put information in the comments, email me. I really want to figure that. That's the first problem that I would love to tackle if we can in the brave new world that comes after this. Because like I said, this is hitting the reset button on our entire industry. And
I know I talked about not wanting to be on camera, but fuck, I hope this records the camera. Physical response is exactly what I'm trying to get to, right? So I'm not that guy, right? I have seen this left and right, and I have been around a ton of people that go through this, and then I had myself gone through this as well. Kitchen, beverage.
Oh, and don't even get me started on how underpaid the kitchen help is. Having been a cook in just a little neighborhood brewery restaurant in New Hampshire, and that, why can't we pay cooks a good wage for the shit you guys have got to put up with in the kitchen? It's thankless. You walk out of that kitchen after a hot, sweaty night, just dying. You're watching servers and bartenders counting hundreds of dollars worth of tips. And you're like, oh, good. I made $12 an hour. You know, like that. And that was
$12 an hour. What were you, a fucking god?
Okay. It's been a long time since I took a cook's paycheck. I think probably I was making $7 an hour in New Hampshire as a cook is probably more realistic.
Probably at $3.25.
Huh?
$3.25 probably.
You were making $3.25 as a cook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where?
I can't tell you because I don't want to get that business in trouble.
Fair enough. Totally understood. But that's criminal. You pour your heart and soul into something like that in an environment that is not healthy. And we'll talk about that at another time, the unhealthy environment of our restaurants.
Dude, I'm in their cookbook. They are doing well enough that they have released a book to offer what they have been doing for years, and my name is in it, and I made $3.25 an hour.
That's another subject that I look forward to doing on probably our next episode, which is gonna, I think, should work around the food porn culture, the cookbooks for people that just have and maybe attempt to cook this beautiful food that they'll never be able to because you'll never afford the tools that an actual kitchen has, or cocktail books, or the Food Network. Impossible. We'll talk about that another time. But going back to, can we figure out a way to reopen our restaurants and bars with a culture that gives the hardworking men and women in front of house and back of house, absolutely more, like back of house is super important because, you know, we revel in watching our cooking shows and our cooking competitions, and you got these people, oh, that looks so amazing. It's like, yeah, but a real kitchen, a minimum 10-hour shift of hot, sweaty, you know, just pans and flame and knives flying around to satisfy the every whim of every diner that sits down in your spot. That's got to change first and foremost. And then for front of house, how do we get out of the tip system? Which, if you go back, I think Danny Meyer published or put out an article a while ago, and don't hold me to that. If it was somebody else, please correct me. I think it was Danny Meyer, found that the history of the tip system goes back to post-Civil War, when nobody wanted to hire black people for anything. And the only jobs they could get were on like the dining cars of the railroads. But even then they're like, you know what? We're not going to pay them the wage you would pay a white person. We'll pay them less and then encourage the diners. Oh, you know, leave a little tip as a thank you. And that's where the history starts, that we can
totally
go
fucked,
on.
Obviously.
Yeah. So, but the rest of the world, you go to Europe and they tell you, friends of mine in England, when I went to visit them 10 years ago, we went out to dinner, just got some pizza. You know, it was just nice, nothing crazy. And I said, I'll pay the bill. You know, they were putting me up and feeding me. The family was great. So I felt like I felt obligated at least buy dinner this one time. Sure. And I go to leave a tip. And my friend, Lucy's like, what are you doing? You paid the bill. Why are you leaving extra? So just leaving a tip. He's like, no, it's insulting to leave a tip because their boss pays them. I had to dig into it. Like, why is a tip insulting? You know, after talking to her, Lucy and some of her friends, it's like, well, these people get paid. And by saying, here's extra money, you're saying, oh, I can tell you're not doing well enough. Here's some extra money. He's like, that's such so backwards from the way we look at it in the States, because when somebody doesn't tip you, we get pissed off, and tipping is optional. I keep telling that to my staff over many, many years. Every staff I've ever been charged with, you know, leading or managing, or however you want to look at it, you can't get angry because it's optional. It's no.
But here becomes the question, right?
But is their livelihood?
Here's the question. For us, that's totally normal. Right? Mm-hmm. You walk into any bar from West Coast to East Coast, top to bottom, even in Canada, from my understanding, haven't been there in a while, it's tipped, right?
Yep.
So you go there and you get your bill, you pay however you would like to, and you give them a tip.
Yeah. Well, and tip culture differs from what part of the country you're going to. When I was working in New Hampshire as a waiter, a 10% tip was a good average. Like, yes, you're making 10% tips, you're doing great. I moved to New York City and I started seeing 15 and 20% tips. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I was shocked that how much people were tipping. And my fellow, you know, bartenders at the time, no, that's normal. 20 is the standard. I understand you go down to the South, like, maybe you go back to that 10-15%. So there isn't even an agreed upon standard of how much you tip, depending on where you are. So, and you know, you go back historically in a bar. I came up with some really cool old school bar operators in New York, and you know, the standard was when you went out, you know, you get out of work, you go to your local after hours spot, and the minimum was a dollar a drink. Of course, none of our drinks were more than $6.
Which used to be the everything go-to.
Yeah. And So you have somebody who grows up with this idea that, oh, a dollar a drink is a good tip. They come up to a place like Chicago, New York City, or the Bay Area, and they order one of our $12, $14, $16 cocktails and leave a dollar. And we go, what the fuck, man? Like, $1 for that? And he's like, well, where they come from, that's
standard. Do you want the stupid answer?
Yeah.
Do you want the stupid answer?
Of course I do.
Right? When was the last time that, even in your home or wherever you may be, you put down the tape and said, hey, how far away is this? Was it in inches or was it in centimeters?
Oh, we always measure in inches. We're the only country in the world that measures in inches.
Why?
Because, I mean, we have this attitude maybe that, oh, we're America. We're better than everybody. We'll do it our way.
Who was around before us?
I mean, who
literally everyone in Europe.
Oh yeah. Yes, yes.
Literally the entire everything. Right? So why are we still doing stuff that makes no fucking sense that no one else does? Can't we just fucking do the right things?
That's, you know, you think that's what it is, but It's so much.
What was the last time you looked in something in kilometers and centimeters?
I was in 11th grade math.
Yeah, you were forced to.
I was forced to. It was math class.
Yeah. So, hey, we're all fucked right now. Let's make this be more functional and be completely transparent across top to bottom.
Yeah. Well, we know it can be done. And I forgot to look this up and I meant to. So I'll find the information on this and I'll post it somewhere so everybody else can read it. But there's, I think it's Philadelphia. There's a restaurant that opened up a few years back and they did away with at opening. We're not doing the tip system. We're paying our staff a living wage. I think they started out their staff at $13 an hour. And everybody, these two guys who opened this restaurant, we're told that by everybody that they knew, it's a stupid idea, you're gonna fail. Well, within 6 months, the restaurant was doing so well, in addition to the living wage that they offered everybody, they were also able to offer a 1% stock or share in the company, whatever it was, and allowed every one of the staff members to sit in if they wanted on every manager meeting that happened where they talked about money and how the operations were going. And the owners welcomed, all right, guys, you're on the front lines every day. What are some of the ideas you think will make things better? And against all conventional wisdom, this approach was supposed to fail, like this restaurant, and they're thriving now. And then you read about this
guy. Did you see the spot in Boston?
No. What spot?
I'll send you this after.
Okay, cool.
It's like she offered to give her books to the entire staff. And if someone was interested in a certain part of it, they could just dive in and look into it. Like, do you see a better, you know, way to offer this or that, the other thing? And what better produce can we get and all this stuff? And do you want to take this and make it yours? And they did. And now she's down like 13%, which is a lot for a restaurant.
You mean cost is down 13%?
Yeah. Nice. And she just put it out on Eater and was like, hey, this is what we do. If you want to see it, I'm doing a webinar.
That's awesome.
This is what we're doing.
There are people out there giving a giant middle finger to the current system and deciding I'm going to do things differently and better. And I want to learn more about that stuff. And this has nothing to do with hospitality, but there's a company in Seattle called Gravity Markets or Gravity Systems. They do credit card processing for the greater Seattle area. And the CEO is our age. I think he's 35 or 36 years old. He's already a millionaire. He started his company out of his garage when he was in high school. He read an article or a study that what was the amount of money a person needed to make so that they didn't have to worry about the daily stresses. And according to the study, done by a couple of universities, the number was $70,000. When somebody make, and the average person makes $70,000 a year, they're less stressed about their day-to-day lives. And again, I'm going to take a pay cut and I'm going to start paying all of my staff at entry level $65,000 to $70,000 a year. And if you've been with longer or you have a seniority, you'll get another pay bump, you know, along those same lines. Again, sure. All of his business buddies, this is stupid. It's going to fail. His business is up 30% right now. He did this move about 4 or 5 years ago. His business is up 30%. He said he went from receiving 3 or 4 resumes a month of potential new employees to 12 to 15 new resumes, because people were like, holy crap, like, this is a company I want to work for. He put his values out there. He did the right thing by his employees. And he tells all of his competitors and his constituents, like, look, I have a bigger pool of talent to pick from now because people are coming to me. I'm not hunting for the talent. I created a culture that is conducive to giving people a good life. He said most of his staff now have been able to buy a home as opposed to renting. His staff went from having maybe one baby to now most of his family is having like 2 or 3 kids. And productivity is up. His company is doing better against all conventional wisdom. And
do you know how cool that is from someone that's in it?
It's cool from somebody who's not even in it. And it begs the question, you know, you see, whether it's giant restaurant chains like McDonald's and Applebee's to the little, you know, privately owned pubs and cocktail bars and restaurants. Now, the big guys, I don't know what their excuse is. They've got money. They get restaurants all over the country. They're doing fine. Why can't they take the initiative to take care of their people?
But they're shitty at business.
They can't. If you're McDonald's, you can't accuse McDonald's of being shitty at business. But why can't
they? No, not those. That middle tier of businesses that are running around.
Oh, yeah.
They're shitty at it.
Well, they're either shitty at it, or what are the systems in place? Like, we know the razor thin margins their restaurants deal with to turn a profit. And working in a privately owned business right now, and I get to look at the numbers, I get to help pay the bills, and I got to, you know, look at my labor costs and all that, and the food costs and the cocktail costs and how much money we're spending on produce. Like, I see all that stuff, and it has driven away my dream of ever owning my own bar, because I cannot handle that type of
the more I know, the less I want to.
Exactly. But you go to Europe and probably many other places around the world, and that's it's a living. It's a legitimate living that they make a living off of, and not being beholden to the tips. And I've had many European guests sit at my bar and go, look, you guys do a great thing. I don't understand why I have to subsidize your pay. It's a legitimate question.
And you don't have that answer because it's different.
Now, again, going back to this reset button that's going to happen once COVID-19 is a thing of the past and the economy gets back up and running.
Yes.
Can we take this opportunity to address something like that? And how do we address it? You know, we see a couple of people out there who have been brave enough to take a chance and try it on their own and be successful. Probably many more who have tried and were unsuccessful. So the question I pose for this episode, when life gets back to normal, and it will get back to normal.
Of course it will. It has to.
It will. And the hospitality industry will come back different, but I think together we'll make it stronger than it ever was before. People are learning now. People who are learning, trying to teach themselves how to cook at home now because they can't go out, which I'd like to talk about at another time. The explosion over the past 20 years of restaurants and bars. You know, our time in Chicago, how many times we talk about, oh my God, is there another restaurant opening? We don't need all the restaurants that we have. I mean, I don't want anybody's business to go under and their livelihood to go under, but
no,
we for really now, need like, all the bars and restaurants that we have right now or had.
No, I mean, that was the conversation before the COVID-19, the bubble burst.
Yeah.
Right?
We didn't think it was going to be.
Well, now the bubble's going to burst.
The bubble has burst. I mean, you're looking at 80% closures of private restaurants and bars across the country when this is all over. But we'll talk about that.
I've had a weird amount of people reach out to me about what they're looking to do, and it's no longer an option. It's like, well,
you hear even a lot of people I've talked to, and you read about it, and like they go, oh, yeah, I've been a bartender for this many years, but the unsustainability of working in there's no safety net at all. If God forbid something happens, we've never worked a safety net into our culture of operating and taking care of our staff. And that's
a great conversation to have next time.
What are the safety nets and how can they be implemented?
And moving up to the places that should be safety nets, why are they not?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't feel that way.
Oh, no. Our lives as – we can't at all speak for everybody's experience, but I find – all right. So my favorite thing that ever happened, and happened a few times over the past few years, a buddy of mine calls me up and goes, hey, I'm getting my first manager job. What's your advice? And I give them a list of things that's going to happen. And I always tell them, like, it's you're going to have 40 hours worth of work to do just operating your business. And then – but 50% of your time is going to be spent babysitting your staff and all these other things. And I paint them a very realistic and not pretty picture of what life will be like once you go into management, once you get that promotion.
The question, though, there's no positive response to that.
No, and then...
How much of that response was honest and being like, hey, this is a good move?
Oh, I advise any of my friends who's been offered a position in management, I say, make sure you really want it. Here's my experience. And while I find my managerial experience to be enriching and I grow from it, it's not fun most of the time. And so I warn them. And without fail, within a month, they call me up and they go, holy crap, you were right. It's like, I'm sorry, man. Like it sounds so cool to be like, I'm running my own cocktail program. I'm the GM of this restaurant. Like you get that. Yes, I finally made it. All that hard work I did to work up the ladder, I got to the top and here I am. And you go, oh shit, this sucks.
Yep, it sure.
All right, we've been going on for probably about an hour now. We're gonna close this up. This is our first episode of We Are the Other Thing. I want to close with just one thing, because a couple of people have asked me, like, why, what is We Are the Other Thing for your podcast title? And that comes from a piece out of my book by my favorite author and one of yours too, Anthony Bourdain. God bless him and fuck him for leaving as soon as he did.
I think we all know.
Yep. So I've got it here. Hold on just one second. I want to read this because it means a lot to me. It means a lot. I think it says a lot about our industry. And I just want to share this, and hopefully it'll explain why we titled our podcast what we did. It's 2 seconds, and then we'll be out of here, because I love this quote.
Yeah, lay it on.
I am technologically illiterate. There we go, found it.
That's all not right. Why we did that.
No. All right, so the quote, this is from The Nasty Bits, a collection of his essays. We are the backstairs help. We are the service industry, meaning that when rich people come into our restaurants, we cook for them. When our customers play, we work. When our customers sleep, we play. We know, or should know, that we are not like our customers, never will be like our customers, and don't want to be, even if we put on a nice score now and again. The people in our dining rooms are different from us. We are the other thing, and we like it that way. I've always looked to Anthony Bourdain for inspiration and thought-provoking, you know, ways of looking at the world. And that quote has stuck with me the most, even so much so I got it tatted on my arm. But that was episode one. Thank you guys for listening. There'll be some comment sections for you guys to leave anything that you want for us to talk about in the future. And I hope to make this a regular thing. Sonic, thank you so much for helping me put this together. I look forward to our next episode very soon. Any last words for the listeners before we head out?
Yeah, for sure. I think the fact that, you know, we did this and we took our time is super cool. And, you know, it takes a lot of effort, whether or not you realize it, to do it. But we're here for you guys, and I think that's what we want. I think hospitality should be the word that we put forward and foremost. And
every time, absolutely.
Reach out to us. I think it's amazing that we have this ability to put this out there, and let's be hospitable. Let's be awesome.
Yeah, I like that. Let's be awesome. Call your friends and family, hug your loved ones, and keep the faith. We're going to get through this. Yeah. We always do. The hospitality
industry, we sure will.
And those who work in the hospitality industry know resilience and creativity, and I know we're going to come back stronger than ever.
And I know this is not something that we touched throughout the episode at all, but I want to throw it out there because it has been something super inspiring to me.
Go for it.
I've got a little one. My son's name is Luke. He was born January 19th, 2019. There's a lot of work that comes from having a little one and having a really awesome family. If you're going through it and getting into a situation where maybe this is your first or something that's very new to you, again, reach out. It's the coolest fucking thing. He's inspiring, and we're here for you guys.
And on that note, we got two more people to thank, most importantly, because these women put up with our shit every day. So, and I know Kelsey's going to hate this, but I got to thank my wife for putting up with me. She's had to live with me nonstop 24/7 for a week now, and she hasn't killed me, so I can still do this. I love my wife. It's a whole nother story that we'll talk about how the women who have inspired us brought us to where we are today. But couldn't do what I do without my wife. Sure. Yep. And it will be, because if there's anything that is the most annoying about Josh and I is we like talking about our wives. So
they're the coolest fucking people.
Yeah. Much love and appreciation to my wife. Thank you. I love you. All right.
Yes. Obviously the same on my end.
All right. We're going to call it for today. We'll see you guys next time. All right.
Let's see how it turns out.
Love you. Yay. Bye.
Hello.
All right. You can hit stop record now. That should give me enough to work with. Out. Cool.